Hi, I'm Clemmie Telford and it's time to get open and get honest. Each week, I interview a guest about a topic that we, as a society, often shy away from. From sex lives to salaries, life and death, religion and real bodies, no subject is off the table. Welcome to Honestly, the podcast. Welcome to a bonus episode of Honestly Podcast. This one is in partnership with NatWest, who are working with the charity Safe Lives to raise awareness of financial abuse and also specifically how banks can help those who are being affected. Financial abuse is insidious and invisible and can have a truly devastating impact on someone's life. Worse still, it can be hard to spot and even harder to find a way out of, which is why this campaign is so important. The sessions were recorded separately to protect the identity of one. An inspiring, brave woman who wishes to remain anonymous told me her story of surviving and indeed thriving after financial abuse, so much so that she's gone on to become an expert and spokeswoman on the subject. So I've been working on this project for a few months and it's been a real eye-opener, actually, because I guess I was aware of domestic abuse but wasn't aware of this type of abuse, and it appears it's extremely common, isn't it?
It's very common, yeah. And often not recognised until the very end or you're out of the relationship.
Yeah, and only on reflection.
Yeah.
So tell me a bit about your situation, how long you'd been in the relationship with the person who ended up abusing you financially.
I was in the relationship for 14 years, just under, and originally it didn't sort of occur to me that that's what was happening, because I saw myself, we'd bought our first house together, and to me it was just me doing the homely things. You know, we were both working, we both earned the same amount of money, but I was buying everything for the house and doing the home up, whereas he had all the excess money to buy himself a nice car and a nice motorbike and do all the things that he wanted to.
So do you feel that it started in one way and just gradually moved towards somewhere else?
Oh, definitely, yeah. I mean, it was a very long time before I realised, possibly even after I'd left the relationship, that I recognised the financial side of it. I didn't even recognise the actual abusive side of it until well into the relationship, after many years.
Because you've just been in there for so long, that becomes your normal, doesn't it?
It does. And I think as well, you know, you see the posters on sort of the back of a toilet door with a lady holding a bruised face or something like that in so many people's minds, then that must be happening every day for it to be an abusive relationship. And you don't recognise the sort of smaller signs that it's happening.
And also with you, aren't I right in saying that you were together from when you were relatively young?
Yeah, I was 21 when we got
married. So that's like more or less the whole of your adult life.
Yeah,
so you're not used to being an independent adult in any other way, are you?
No, I didn't know any other way. In my view, it was, you know, we moved in together, we get the house looking nice, and, you know, I had the house, he had all the cars and the manly stuff.
Yeah.
But it was when he refused to contribute towards any household items. That was the sort of start of it. I mean, it all started off in my mind fairly sort of innocently, because when we bought our first house, and at the time, you know, you had 100% mortgages, but what happened over time was that if he got a credit card or he bought something on a loan, he would set the direct debit out of the joint bills account. And so I found myself putting more and more money into the joint bills account and having no money, whereas he had pretty much the whole of his wages. And as we kind of went through, you know, progressed in our careers and everything,
yeah, that becomes more
he had
figures.
More money, I was putting more money into the account. And, you know, at the time, originally it didn't seem to matter so much, but then I got made redundant and I found it difficult to find a job with the same wages and had children then. And I mean, the turning point for me was when I asked him to hold our first daughter when she was a baby crying. And at this time, I'd just lost my job through redundancy. And he said to me, when you earn as much money as I do, then you can ask me to do something.
So he didn't think it was his place to have to hold the baby?
No.
His daughter?
Yeah.
I mean, that's bonkers, isn't it?
It is. And he said, if you want to go out to work, then you need to pay for all the childcare and everything, because you're the one that wants to go to work. And I was there thinking, but we can't afford me not to go to work.
So in his mind, once you'd had kids, that was your job? And
yeah.
it is a cliche, you think it will never happen to me, but you're in that moment, you've had a baby with someone who at one point you have loved, and you're just trying to survive that part, aren't you?
Yeah, and I think, you know, it really was the turning point for me having kids, because that was the first time, not long after that he actually properly punched me in the face and gave me a black eye. And, you know, people say, oh, why don't they leave? But actually, I'd been with this man for 8 years before we had kids. Now, you know, with hindsight, I can look back at a lot of things that happened well before that.
Really?
That weren't right. Yeah, you know, just sort of like getting annoyed with me and kind of holding my clothes at the scruff of my neck and sort of banging me against the wall. But because he didn't actually punch me, I didn't see it as
thought he was a bit rough.
Yeah, just thought, oh, I've really annoyed him.
And then how old were your kids when you decided it something needed to change?
They were 6, 4 and 2. And so what had happened?
Kids exactly that age now.
Yeah.
But that you're in the middle of something, you know, it's hard.
It's really, really
you're
hard.
You're in the trenches of parenting.
And it's also, you know, he sort of sold it to me that I was useless with money. So where we had this joint account and I was putting all this money in, there wasn't enough money. So when I'd found another job after I'd been made redundant, after a little while, still didn't have enough money to put in this joint account. So I went and got an evening job. So I was working all the day and then I was working till 1 o'clock in the morning cleaning. And he would say to me, well, why haven't you got any money? You're just useless with money.
And you're still doing the majority of the childcare.
Yeah, and all the jobs around the house and everything.
Holding a house together, which is a huge job in itself, is a complete job in itself, isn't it?
Yeah.
So what was the tipping point to actually making a change or seeking support?
Well, he'd become ever more sort of violent towards me, because even though it didn't start until after 8 years, it was sort of another 6 months before something else happened. And then he was just as sorry as the first time. But then sort of 3 months later, something else would happen. I kind of tried to look into it on a Women's Refuge website about what can I do? Is this what I'm experiencing? Mm-hmm. And I had kind of started trying to plan what I could do, but I couldn't see how I could afford
to do
anything. And in my mind, a refuge was kind of an awful place to take my kids to. And would I be taking them to something worse? So I'd kind of put off and thought, oh, perhaps I'm better staying here with him.
In our home.
We met in the bank, because where we had this joint bank account, what they used to do was the bank used to take money out of my account if the joint account was going to go overdrawn.
Well, that was your account was a buffer.
Yeah, so they used mine, not his, to move money over. And I mean, you know, looking back, if the bank had seen it, they could clearly see that all of his wages were his own, whereas all of mine from 3 jobs by this time were going into this bills account. Basically, he said they'd taken £10 out of his account because there was nothing left in mine. And so he marched me in there, caused a right scene, and said, how dare they take the money out of my account, out of his account, and they should use mine. And as we left the bank, this is in my lunch break in the middle of the town centre, full of people. And when we came out, he said that I'd embarrassed him, and he actually tried to swing a punch for my face
in public,
and that was kind of the final straw for me.
Yeah,
and I ducked and I ran back to my office, and he said to me, you can run, but I'm going to finish the job when I get home.
Oh, wow.
And things had actually got so bad
that you felt that was the real threat.
I felt that if I went home while he was there, that he would kill me, basically.
Really? I'm so sorry. What an awful thing. So at that point, what do? Go and get your kids are at school, or where are they?
Yeah, they were at school and nursery, and I broke down when I got back to the office, and my manager at the time took me aside and just wrote down the refuge number.
Really?
Because they'd kind of guessed it.
Had they?
So yeah, I rang this refuge and they said sort of gather important documents that you
so you did that afternoon,
picked them up at 3:30 and off we went.
Were you scared that he'd come home?
Gosh, I was absolutely petrified that he was going to turn up before I was going and then I would still die, basically. So, and you know, I think when I actually arrived at the refuge, that's the one and only time in my life that I've actually had a full proper panic attack. because, huge, you know, I was imagining all sorts of things that he was going to, how he was going to find me by tracing my number.
Once you're
plate.
There, you're safe.
Yeah, and it was so lovely. It was absolutely nothing like I had imagined.
Really?
It was absolutely lovely place to stay at, and I actually cried when I had to come back home because
really?
It was so nice.
Just someone just to feel safe, I guess.
Yeah, it was lovely.
And so that was how many years ago?
That was 15 years ago.
15 years ago. And by that point, so you've got no money of your own at that point?
Absolutely nothing, no. And my work were really good, and I managed to open another bank account while I was in the refuge, and they diverted my wages. Because, of course, if I'd have used anything from my bank account, then the statement would have been sent home and he would have seen which cash point I used. Yeah.
So from a financial point of view, what were the next steps? You get your own bank account, you've got a job.
Yeah.
But you've got to get your kids into new childcare.
Yeah. Well, I actually, while I was in the refuge, I found a renewed sort of strength, and I decided that I wasn't going to give up a job that I loved or a house that I'd largely paid for.
Really?
So I decided to go back home, and I got him to sign an undertaking that he would leave me alone, and I returned home. However, he didn't leave me alone, and I found myself going to get an injunction against him.
Really?
But unfortunately, because of the financial situation, I actually had to represent myself against him.
Because you couldn't afford.
Yeah. I did win.
Did you?
Yeah.
Because you're...
Keep everything.
Really?
Keep everything and write notes. And yeah, and I was able to do it. So I've never been to the police about him until 2 years ago.
And what was the tipping point 2 years ago?
2 years ago, he tried to strangle my son. So, but no, up until that, I'd never even
when gone. You easily could have done.
Yeah, but I never did, because I think most people in my situation just want them gone. Actually, you know, in my mind, I didn't care whether he got away with it. I didn't care.
No, I just want to be safe.
Yeah, I just want him
and
out
your children
of my
to
life.
Be safe.
Yeah,
because that's the hard thing. He's still their father, isn't he?
Yeah. Unfortunately.
Yes, nothing you can do about that. But they are the best part of him, I suppose, aren't they?
Yeah, and they've all, you know, grown up okay, so... Yeah.
So all you can do as a parent. So the house was already in your name?
No, it was in both names, but again, I did my own court order for that as well.
Did you?
Yeah. I mean, I probably could have done a better deal if I had got a solicitor.
But there's something, like, A, saving money, but B, super empowering. You were like, no.
Yeah.
Did you just research online to figure out how to do
it? Yeah, basically. Yeah, just Googled everything and how to do it. So, yeah, I had four separate cases that I did myself. I did the injunction, the child contact, because when I was in the refuge, he thought that if he did a child access case, that they would have to tell him where I was, which isn't the case.
No, they're going to protect.
And then there was the divorce and the financial settlement within.
You did
that.
Them all?
Did them all.
Did you go to court?
Yeah.
Amazing. All over what kind of period of time?
I had it all done and dusted by, I think, within a year.
Amazing.
Yeah. But the long-term thing for me was all of the debt, because part of the reason for wanting to keep the house was because I just wanted it signed over to me. There was no money in it, because just before I left him, he said, if we take the equity out, which was $35,000, we can pay some of that debt off. And unfortunately, once it was in the bank, he went off.
Spent it.
Yeah, just went and bought a new car with it and spent it. So I never saw any of that. But it did mean that there was no equity in the house, so he wasn't going
to fight
me.
For it.
Yeah. But my thinking was, if I come off the mortgage ladder, I'm never going to
get back
on it.
Because you've got debts here, there, and here.
Yeah. So I went to Step Change, and they said, okay, this is your quick appointment. What we need to do in a week's time is you have everything in front of you, and we're going to add it all up.
Like consolidate your debts?
Well, just tell how much it is so that we can then go and approach people with repayments. And when they added it up, it was £58,370.
Did you cry at that point? Yeah. But you kind of knew by the point you sat there.
So I thought absolutely no way on this earth will all these companies. I think it was, I can't remember now, it was probably about 17 different people that
well,
I
creditors,
owned.
Yeah. Like, what kind of people?
It was mainly where credit cards and things, either because I would have to buy him things such as DVD players, but a lot of the time it was just to buy food.
You know, when the going gets tough, you feel like the world's closing in on you, but actually there are routes, aren't there?
Yeah, and I mean, you know, part of the reason, and this is one of the things that I always say, is if you're in that situation and you believe that you need credit to survive, you are going to pay things like your credit card above, like, rent and things like that, that are going to have a, it's going to take longer for someone to do something about rent arrears, whereas a credit card will get stopped if you haven't paid it. And I think, you know, people working in the financial sector as a whole need to recognise, actually, why on earth does this person pay their Sky bill and not their rent or their mortgage? What if my kids need new shoes? What if I've got no money for food? How am I going to pay for those things? Yeah. And actually, they're more priority debts to me than the things that are going to take longer to catch up with me. And I think that's sort of a key thing
that people can't really understand until you're in that in that moment.
And I think, you know, that kind of thing needs to be out there. But in my mind, I was looking at, you know, oh, if I go bankrupt, then they're going to take this house that I've fought so hard for. And, you know, what am I going to do? No one's ever going to accept this. But actually, you know, step change for me were an absolute lifesaver.
Really? So they taught you through each of those things?
They taught me through. They do enough for you to live on, for you to still sort of be able to buy all your kids' foods and clothes and save for birthdays and everything like
that. Have a life.
Yeah. And then the rest of it goes in one lump sum off to the creditors. So they take one direct debit
and they divide it out.
And they divide it out in proportion to how much money you owe.
Oh, really?
And for the first, I know it sounds mad, but I thought, you know, if I get rid of these credit cards, I'm not going to be able to afford to live. But doing that, I had more money than I had in years because I've been so used to spending so little.
Yeah, you're used to living frugally.
Yeah.
But also just to feel in control, you're like, that's that. That's the bit that I'm paying back, and this is my life. And it just, for it to be clear,
and it is a bill,
and
you're
in control
for.
For the first time ever.
Yeah, and what was, you know, once the direct debits had gone out, that was it. I had this money to live on, and it, you know, like I said, it was more than I'd ever had in the last how many years.
And I think I read that you have actually finally paid off that debt.
Yeah.
How many years later?
I think it was about 12 or 13 years.
Do you remember making the last payment?
Yep.
Amazing.
Yeah,
you're remarkable.
But I think, you know, people don't realise as well the kind of long-term effects, because while paying that money off, and, you know, then the house starts falling to bits around you, and, you know, we didn't have our first family foreign holiday until a year after I'd paid it off, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, it's a very, I might have got rid of him and sorted that out 15 years ago, but 13 years on,
you're still paying the consequences.
Yeah.
What would your advice be to your younger self, but to anyone who thinks they're being affected by financial abuse?
I think, you know, read up on it if it's safe to do so, to understand your situation, but actually, you know, and realise that actually things that are happening in your life are probably all quite calculated around it, even though you don't see it at the time. And my life has been so much better. I've gone and done things that I wouldn't have dreamt that I'd been able to do.
You've done 4 court hearings and paid off 57 grand. It's like unbelievable.
But it is like, you know, I would say after that initial year, I'm not going to deny that first year was absolutely horrendous. But once I had the step change direct debit set up and they were paying back all my creditors and I could budget and everything, I found time to go and do all the things that the previous 14 years that I hadn't been able to do. And, you know, I think that since then I've had a brilliant life.
Yes, it's given you this superpower, hasn't it?
Yeah.
How did friends and family react around all of this?
Well, I obviously lost a lot of them, because one of the things that they do is isolate you from your friends and family. And when I got to the refuge, I texted everyone that I knew and said, by the way, I'm in a refuge. And everyone rallied round so much helping me. Yeah. And they were like, oh, you know, thank goodness.
Do you think they suspected?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And he, when I was in the refuge, he drove to all my friends and family and told them that I'd left him because I'd run up loads of debt. But he was willing to take me back. Did they know where I was?
And did they know that was...
Yeah, well, they all could see the way that he treated me when he was with me, so...
You must feel like you're just finding yourself. There's such formative years of your life that were lost to this relationship.
But I can't look back and regret it.
No,
because I think,
it's made you who you are, and also your children,
Yeah, and, you can't dwell on the past, because if I sat there getting annoyed about the debt and everything and the years lost and everything, then he would win, wouldn't he?
Yes.
So I just look to the future, and I've gone out there and done things I would never have been able to do before.
So, yeah, one of my last questions again, what have you learned? And it's, I guess you've learned your own capacity for survival.
Yeah, definitely.
And remarkable strength.
Yes, definitely. It's definitely made me a stronger person. I really see the value and the beauty in life now. I think there is that thing, you only live once.
Mm.
And, in my mind, when I was thinking about leaving him, I used to say to myself, you're not going to be able to come back and do this again.
Dress rehearsal.
Yeah, and that for me has been key. I actually find joy in everything. I go out and I learn things and I do things and sort of want to make the most of the life that I've been given and make up for lost time. I would say that my life began when I left him.
Yeah, amazing. You're amazing.
Oh, thank you. I don't feel it, but...
you really should, because... Yeah, to come out of adversity fighting so hard, and when the odds really are stacked against you, and to change things around so much, it really could have defeated you, and it hasn't, has it?
No, not at all.
No, it's given you fire in your belly.
It has.
Well, thank you so much.
And thank you.
Thank you so much for coming in. I really appreciate
it. You're welcome.
My other guest is Kim Chambers, a financial abuse specialist working in NatWest's customer protection team. You might not think it, but a bank has a vital role to play, which is why Safe Lives consult on a range of NatWest policies, procedures and services to ensure those affected by financial abuse can be provided with the best possible support. From reporting their circumstances or having secure face-to-face conversations with specialist staff, such as Kim, to removing the requirement for both parties to be present to take a name off a joint account, the bank provides a breadth of services aimed at helping customers affected by financial abuse. During our conversation, Kim shares expert insight into how this type of abuse manifests, as well as signs of what to look out for and where to seek help. The name of the podcast is Honestly, so I do a quick fire round to begin with. It helps to kind of get us both relaxed. So, on a scale of 1 to 10, how cool are you?
Oh, gosh. 7.
A comfortable 7. On a scale of 1 to 10, how kind are you?
Oh, I'd like to think an 8.
Back yourself. You do a job that is inherently good to people, so you can feel pretty good about that. On a scale of 1 to 10, how strong are you?
Resilient, probably, I guess, with this job particularly. So from a work point of view, probably about an 8 as well, 7 or 8. Yeah, I think you have to be.
We'll get on to it later, but do you have a support for yourself? Because if you're dealing with pretty tricky situations all the time.
Yeah, I think the team, I've got a great line manager, I've got great colleagues, and I do a lot of things in my spare time as well to keep busy and to be able to sort of let go. Yeah, to switch off, I guess. Yeah, you do have to be resilient.
Yeah, you do.
You have to really try and remain factual
and sort practical. Of work.
Yeah, practical, because you're there to help somebody and you need to be the strong one to be able to help them and be, clear on what it is you want to do.
Are you a night owl or early bird?
Early bird.
Yeah, I'm trying to wonder if ever I was a night owl. I think I tried to be a night owl in my youth, but the older you get, the more you're like...
Yeah, definitely. Definitely an early bird.
Yeah. Dog or cat person?
Dog person.
Introvert or extrovert?
Ooh. Somewhere in the middle.
Again, I think that most people are.
Yeah, I think somewhere in the middle.
Yeah,
I have my moments.
Yeah, exactly. It depends who you're with and what day of the week it is.
Yeah, what brings it out in you.
What star sign are you?
I'm a Taurus.
Are you?
Yes. Taurus the bull.
Yeah. Probably puts you in a very... Yeah, loads of people aren't into this, but I think it probably makes you very well positioned for this job.
Oh,
Taurus, I know, very reliable and honest. When did you last cry?
Oh, probably on the weekend.
Yeah, recently.
Yeah, quite recently.
When did you last weigh yourself?
This morning.
Regular. When did you last go to the dentist?
I'm due on the in about a week's time.
So you've got an appointment.
So, yes,
well
I've
done.
Got
you.
An appointment.
That
how
is
good
a firing
is that?
Start to 2020, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. Oh, it did. Was booked 3 months ago, but that's how long it takes.
Are you one of those people I dream of being who books their appointment as you leave?
I think I just I just had a reminder through, and yeah, we can't fit you in for months. But there we go.
But you've done it. Well done. You can fit. Yeah. Have you ever wet yourself as an adult?
That's a great one. I'm trying to think. I probably have. I did a extreme wolf run in
what
minus.
What does that involve?
It was in minus 2 or 3 degrees, swimming through water and running around a lake. And I'm not athletic in any way, shape, or form. That was quite a challenge. It was 10k, lots of obstacles, and as I say, the temperature was minus 2. I think when we
in
set off,
war-
and then we had to swim across a lake.
That
I think involuntarily wet myself. Is
yeah,
probably
I mean, but
to
who
warm
knows?
Myself
yeah,
up.
Who knows what's going on? How did you do in your GCSEs, and has it impacted your life?
I did okay in my GCSEs, and I won't say it's impacted my life because what I'm doing now is not what I thought I'd be doing
really?
Then. I was a veterinary nurse, actually.
Were you?
Yeah, so I qualified as a veterinary nurse many moons ago. So whilst I did get my GCSEs, I didn't go on to uni or anything. I decided to follow that route. So,
but it just shows you, look, if you can tell your whatever 16-year-old self, you really cannot plan how
plan
it's going to map out.
No. Definitely not. And you find things. I mean, this particular role, again, I joined the bank 20 years ago and I never dreamt that this role would ever be available. So, yeah, life experience gets you through and makes you realise what you want to do.
Absolutely. I don't think careers now for us, but for the next generation, are going to follow that track at all.
I don't think people know what's out there for them.
No, that's, exactly. Well, there's some statistic that a huge percentage of jobs don't even exist yet.
Yes,
that,
yeah.
You know,
yeah, so how can decisions
how can
be
we
made?
Make, yeah, yep. Exactly. Where are you happiest?
Out walking with my dog.
Yeah, it's pretty great, isn't it? I do laugh. I just remember my parents trying to get me to go on walks and think it was the most boring thing. And then, yeah, you end up doing it yourself.
Absolutely.
And it is.
We love the Lake District, so we're off there this weekend.
I've
actually,
never
so.
Been. It's on my list
oh,
this year.
Go.
What are you most afraid of?
Oh, that's an interesting one. Not too sure on that one.
No kind
being
of...
alone, maybe?
Yeah.
You know?
That's pretty...
That's, you know...
Pretty relatable, isn't
yeah.
it? Yeah. What's your biggest regret?
My biggest regret is probably, is just a very personal one. I got married at the age of 20, which is great. Still married.
Are you?
But I wish we'd travelled.
Yeah.
I wish we took a year out together to travel. But then I had, you know, I had my children young as well, 21. I was 21 when I had my first. So both kids are very self.
Yeah, you
left
kind of
home.
Come out the other side.
Absolutely. So we travel now. But
yeah.
that feeling of travelling when you're young... you have less inhibitions. And I think that would have been... that. It's not a massive regret because life's fine.
It is how it worked
It was
out.
Something... I wish we took time together before we got a mortgage and got married.
Three words your friends would use to describe you.
Fun.
Oh, that's good.
Caring, I hope. And loyal, I think. I hope that's... I know that's how they are because I've got some good friends and I feel the same about them.
Oh, so. You've got your crew.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's a pretty great way to be described, isn't it? So there we are. We're in the flow now. It's not so scary.
No,
it's just a great chat.
Not
and now we're going to get on to the bit that you are an expert on. So we're going to talk about financial abuse. And earlier in January, I shared an amazing blog post by Kim on Mother of All Lifts, which has had an astounding impact, which, I could have expected it, but there's been some examples where it has quite literally changed people's lives instantaneously, and I'm sure that's just a glimpse of what happens in your day-to-day life.
Yeah.
So can you first of all just tell us what financial abuse is and then in turn what your job entails?
Yeah, so financial abuse is a form of domestic abuse. It may be where an abuser interferes with them, their partner's money, access to money and their finances, and that can be done through control. So it's sort of like taking control of what they're doing, having to account for everything they're doing, showing receipts, not allowing them access to bank accounts. It can present itself in so many different ways. The assumption is that this is something that affects a lot of women.
Mm-hmm.
In my experience, yes, I've dealt with more women who have been affected by it, some who probably didn't realise for a long time, some who do realise but don't know how to move on from it. But having said that, I have It does happen to anybody. I've had other situations very much so when it's not that way around, and it is, you know, the man that's being financially abused and controlled, because it is all around control and coerciveness. So it's done in a way that you don't really realise it's happening.
From the conversations I've been having and the stories I've been reading, it can come in many forms, but often it can be a thing that happens gradually over time, you know. And I even myself watched this example where I was trying to do my tax return, and I was like, oh, Ben, my husband, could you just do it? Because he's better at that than me. And then I just was like, oh no, I've got to make, not that he would then go on to abuse me, but you just make those shifts.
Absolutely.
Where you hand over responsibility, and especially, if you've been in a long-term relationship, the habits form, don't they?
They do, and I don't, what happens over time, and if you link it with, obviously, domestic abuse, it's control, it's jealousy, it's everything that you can probably mix together that actually brings that out. Yeah. And that's why it does build up over time. So I've had situations where I've had people who have been going through it for a long period of time, you know, sort of 20 plus years, but can they pinpoint the time it actually started happening? Probably not. It's just what they've got used to. It's become the norm. And equally, I've had people who have been in the early stages of relationships, and it's become apparent very quickly that they've got to account for things, or they've been having to add the partner to the joint account, or even worst case scenario, borrow money for that person.
Yes.
So yeah, it does present itself in various ways.
And I guess it's one of those cliches, you never know what's going on behind closed doors, but you get used to your version of normal. But it's only when you begin to have some frank conversations with friends or family where you go, oh no, doesn't everyone cut it up like this, that you begin to
realise. Yeah. And I think that's key in what's being done now. So banks, and obviously it's not just banks, this is happening everywhere, but banks for one are talking about it more and making people aware what it is. And I think that's the biggest thing.
Yeah.
Once people start understanding, the more that it's talked about, the more people can acknowledge the signs or recognise the signs, that's when people will realise what situation they're in. But it's breaking down into specifics, that can I account for my own money? Can I use my bank card to go, you know, and get what I want? Do I need to show my receipts? Do I need to add somebody to my account? It's breaking it down into smaller bits and actually putting those bits together to suddenly realise that there may be something.
A bigger picture.
Yeah, absolutely.
I read a great thing on the NatWest website, actually, which was some questions to ask yourself.
Yes.
And actually, we are talking about partners, but this, of course, could be a family member, a carer, or indeed a friend,
yeah,
I suppose.
Absolutely.
So have any of these happened to you? Have they asked you to account for everything you spend, insisted you give them your income from salary or benefit payment, stopped you from having access to your bank account, or insisted their name be added to your account, forced you to take out credit agreements for products that they then use, for example, car finance or mobile phone contracts, forced you to put all household bills in your name, stopped you from going to work or college or university, cashed your pension or other checks without permission, and stopped you from spending on essentials? And this is the thing, there's so many facets there, isn't there?
There is. And I think what's key, what's really key to pull out of that is all those questions. Some of them, you know, when you're listening to that list, would make you think, well, but that's not a problem. That's okay that I have to account for that, because we've got, you know, we've got bills to pay, we've got this to happen. But then you can see the extremes that it goes to.
Yes.
And you've got to remember that what might be extreme to myself and you, because we think, you know, we'd like to think we wouldn't be in that situation. Yeah. But people do get into that situation. Anybody is susceptible of getting into that.
Who does this happen to? And the feedback I've been getting, I'm sure it can happen to anybody.
Absolutely,
and often
anybody.
The people you least expect.
I think that is key. There is no typical. And sort of going back to that list, I think the important thing to really pull out of that is what might be extreme for one person might not be extreme for somebody else, or vice versa.
Yes.
So you have to take things, it's how it affects that person.
Yes.
Because sadly, this can be linked to some really difficult, distressing, you know, other forms of abuse.
Yes, so I was going to say it often comes hand in hand with domestic abuse.
Absolutely.
Isn't it? So let's talk about that first phone call. Somebody rings your department, and how does that look?
So what happens, we have various ways that people can get in touch, and I think it's key that people realise that. You're going to have some situations with our branches, so somebody might be in a branch face-to-face and be brave enough. Or I think often when it comes to me, it would be when that person is at a stage that they're thinking about moving, thinking about leaving, and what can they do? So it's sometimes they're brave enough to have that initial conversation with somebody in the branch.
Yeah.
In which case, our colleagues are obviously trained to understand and spot that they're not to take any action as such at that point.
Yeah.
They collect as much information as they can, as you know, as much as they feel comfortable and that person feels comfortable to give. That then gets referred into our team, to me specifically. So obviously I work within a team and we all support with sort of financial harm, if you like, but I specialise in the financial abuse in this situation, and then I become that contact for that person.
And is that over what period of time? Whatever's required.
Whatever's required. You know, I talk to customers all day, every day, and some of those cases will be ones that I spoke to yesterday, will be ones I spoke to last week, last month, even last year.
Yeah.
And that's how it goes. But the fact is, I'm there. I give them my direct contact details once I've made that initial contact, because it's quite, you've got to understand each case is different and some will come with a risk. So I need to know when is good to contact them.
Yes.
So that's something that we need to capture at that first point of contact.
And how can you help? Setting up other accounts?
Yeah, you know, we can help in so many ways. And I'll say it again and again, you know, people don't think to talk to their bank, but your bank account is your life. It's your means to every day.
Yeah.
You know, that we all need a bank account. So you've got that on two sides. From an abuser's point of view, they can see everything you do, and that's where the controlling and the coercion happen, because every coffee you buy, every train ticket you buy, everything will be shown on that bank statement.
It's showing a glimpse of your life, isn't it?
But then from a survivor's sort of stance, they need that to start managing again. So if they are held on joint accounts, we can help by where customers have left an abusive relationship and they're in safe house, or they're in, you know, refuge, exactly. We can help them get, often these people have left home quite quickly.
Yeah, without any of that.
Without identification. So we've got processes in place where we can help them get accounts set up with other means of identification.
Right. So,
you know, comes through to me, and then obviously I support with that process. It might be that they need to get off joint accounts. It might be that they've actually managed to take that break from that person, but the abuser is abusing the account still and that person's name on it. So you've got to think about credit ratings, borrowing, all sorts of things.
And these are such long-term implications, aren't
they? Yeah, and it's something else to hold over them.
Yeah.
So no, I won't sign that form for you to be removed from the account, because I can control, I'm still controlling you. I can get an overdraft, I can do this. So it's still a form of control. And somebody who's been in that situation, that's just yet another thing that's just keeping them. That doesn't allow them to move on. But the fact is, we can support by only taking one signature to get them relieved from that.
Which is such important things to hear, because when I can imagine when the walls are closing in and you just feel like there is no way out, even that little ray of hope that you can
absolutely
do that is a stepping stone, isn't it?
It's important that we get as much information as we can. We listen to that information and we digest that, because I think the one thing to be clear on is sometimes reacting, you could do the wrong thing
and
put somebody more at risk.
Oh, it's a mindful, isn't it? As part of the podcast, I always like to ask the good people of Instagram for their insight on something. So I asked my audience, have you been financially abused? And 13% had.
God.
And I said, who by? And predominantly it was partners, but a huge one that came up was by their parents, people in abusive relationship with their parents. Is that something that you come across? Well, you wouldn't normally have joint accounts necessarily.
No, but that's the thing. It's not always about joint accounts.
No.
A lot of the relationship abuse, financial abuse situations I see are sole accounts, but it's still that control, because, you know, maybe you get a loan in your name and you do that. So, no, it's not always joint account related. It's just when it is that, you know, that's where people need to realise we can help. Sadly, yes, I have seen parent abuse.
Yeah,
and
because it's a control thing.
It is a control thing. And I had a case within the last month, actually, where it was a very young customer who, you know, was at just sort of starting out in work, and parents had started taking salary off her the minute it came in, expecting bills to be paid from that salary.
And it's so hard because you don't know the bigger picture.
No, and I think, you know, I don't know if it's really the right phrase, but if you think that that's a young person that maybe had, you know, grown up in this family home, gone off to university, come, you know, left university, got into a job, but only ever been in that home environment, relying on parents, and had siblings, but that she was the only one working, so therefore it was all down to her. And the impact it had on her was huge.
Yeah.
It was awful. So yes, I do see it.
Yeah, I was really surprised by that, but I also could understand it. And also it's important to reference it becomes much more complex because you can sever a relationship with a partner more easily than you can with family.
Absolutely. Because how do you challenge, how do you challenge your parents? That's right.
I also asked my audience, how did that abuse manifest? And normally when I ask these open-ended questions, I get like repeated answers, but there was actually no pattern. That is the tricky thing. It came about in many, many ways and often so difficult to put your finger on. I asked them how it made them feel, and these were some of the words used to describe it. Guilty, isolated, like it was my fault. A prisoner, stupid, powerless, unworthy, suffocated, and not like myself. And that, for me, that really tapped into this thing that it gets into the core of your being, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. Yeah, because you question yourself. And I think that's why it needs to be taken so seriously.
Yeah.
And the help needs to be there.
I asked them what the tipping point was, and sadly someone said, I haven't got to the tipping point. Somebody else said, by being burnt out, I was working 7 days a week and I couldn't sustain it anymore. Your content, and that's to you, Kim, that was the tipping point for them. For me, it was embroiled in other forms of abuse, including physical, getting pregnant and realising that I had to do the right thing by my son, at which point it's really important to flag that if you are pregnant, from my understanding, pregnancy is a key time that abuse can rise.
I was just exactly going to say that when you said that then. That is something that we very much learnt from Safe Lives and the training that we had, because it's yet another way to a reason to control, isn't it?
I think I'm right in saying that midwives would be trained in, like, you are able to talk to them and they will help you in the right direction. So if you are going to midwife appointments on your own, reach out to them and they will help you.
Definitely.
And someone said the tipping point for them was ending up in hospital.
Gosh.
Yeah, it just gets to you, doesn't it? People are undergoing such awful things. I asked people where they went for help, and these were the top answers. Citizens Advice Bureau came up over and over and over again. I don't know a lot about what they do, but it seems loads of people found them a great resource. So yeah. Go to them. Women's Aid, someone said they saved our lives. My parents, the police, a health visitor, a midwife,
yeah.
A refuge. Unfortunately, he committed suicide in 2014. Step Change, which my other guest mentioned, where they really helped her consolidate her debts and work out her way over. Friends and the hospital. Oh, so much to take in. I asked people what they wish they'd known, and they said over and over again that they wish they'd known that financial abuse was a thing. If your instincts are telling you that this might not be quite right, then, you know, start pursuing that because you've really, really got to trust your instincts in things like this.
Yeah.
I wish I'd known my rights. I wish I'd known that it would all be okay and to be brave and to make the first call. And that's so often the case with the life's most difficult moments. Often your very bottom is the moment when it starts getting better, isn't it? If you can just reach the bottom and start making a change. And then the last one, I wish I'd known how fucking strong I was. And again, certainly with the guest I spoke to earlier, people's capacity for survival is incredible, isn't it? But you can get through this.
Yes, yeah. And there are people there to help.
And then I asked people if there's anything I'd forgotten, and they wanted to flag, how do you know when it's someone appearing to be helpful and helping you with your money and when that sways into abuse? And again, I don't want to go and make people wave loads of red flags unnecessarily. You've got to just trust yourself, haven't you?
Yeah, I think it's when things suddenly change. I think if something changes quite dramatically where you didn't used to have to account for things,
yes.
You know, what is the reason you're accounting for things now? Is it because, you know, money's tight and you've got things that you're saving
you're
for jointly? Or is it actually, hang on a minute, I'm not actually using any of this money, but they are.
That's a good way of framing it. What's their motivation?
Yes, yeah, exactly. So you have to sort of dissect it down, I guess, and be aware of it to then see if anything else changes during that time. Why am I now accounting for this? Why do I need to get a joint account for this? You know, if there's no reason for that, then question it, you know.
And also, I maybe I'm wrong, but when you're saying, oh, you know, it can be early days, well, actually, perhaps it's something that can be rectified. You know, relationships can find themselves, particularly going down a way. And if you can work back and work out why you're finding yourself in this position.
Yes, yeah.
you could maybe stop it before it becomes something that is a huge problem.
Doing things jointly in itself is not wrong. Doing things jointly when you don't have that joint free, you know, you don't have your own freedom to spend on there is obviously something that you need to understand why it's changed and what's the motive for that.
Yeah, and if it doesn't feel right to you, then that's 100% valid.
Absolutely.
But
yeah.
Someone did bravely reach out to me and say that, I guess why I'm asking that they were worried that they were showing abusive tendencies and what should they do? And I think that was, first of all, extremely brave of them
hugely
to come from.
Brave, yeah.
And I think it's the same thing in reverse, isn't it? Ask yourself why you're doing it.
Yes, yeah.
Is your partner wanting the relationship to be like that?
Yeah.
And what is the alternative way to go about things?
Yes, yeah. And yeah, find out that point that made you think, why have I changed what we were doing?
Because
what is the reason for changing this now?
When the going gets tough, and again, especially if you've got small kids and you do have to button down your finances, that is the difference, isn't it? Like when you first
absolutely.
Get together and you've got not much responsibility and not much to be paying for, suddenly you do need to be more transparent, and it's trying to keep that in a way that feels neutral and not controlling.
Absolutely, yeah.
I think when we're talking, it's very easy to get bogged down in how serious this is. But I'm hoping that you have got some positive outcomes and some happy endings and people managing to get back on their feet.
Definitely. I have thankfully got plenty of situations where I can say people have come out the other side. I've got a recent one that's left the situation, opened a new account. We've managed to do that through our exceptions process.
Yeah.
And actually moved it on even further to be able to split the funds and close that joint connection.
Yeah.
So that's, for me, what a great outcome. Happy endings do happen. People need to remember that they can get to the end of this. And from a personal point of view, the fact that banks and you know, we're understanding, people are talking about this more in all areas, you know, in the newspapers, on the television. As I say, you wouldn't expect your banks necessarily, but we're all taking this step. So for me, that's got to be the biggest positive.
And yeah, I've touched on it already, but speaking to you and speaking to my other guest who was in a physically abusive relationship and was left with £57,000 worth of debt and has recently paid off the last part of that. And she's just like, of course she would never choose it, but it has made her the person that she is. And I think the stories that were coming through to me were the ones who were saying, oh yeah, my father-in-law was abusive to my mother-in-law for her entire life. And it's just like, oh wow, that is never too late to try and make a change and try and find that happiness again. However daunting it may seem, there are people out there who can try and help.
Yes, yeah, definitely. And that's, I think, like you say, that's for that specific one you just said then, how strong must she feel now to get to that, you know, absolutely. And so rightly so, you know, total superwoman to do
and
that.
And there's no shame in finding yourself in this situation, because I think that's why when you talk about it in your palms sweat, because you can see how it happened.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And fortunately, you know, if we can get to the point where we don't, you know, we hear less about it, then what a fantastic place to be. But the only way we're going to get there is from people actually opening up, sharing, moving forward and realising
it exists. Yeah, as people said, they didn't even know that financial abuse is even a thing.
Absolutely.
So before we finish up, is there anything particular you want to shout about? Anything you're doing that you're proud of, or that you're raising money for anything?
I mean, obviously, from the work point of view, I'm proud of what we're doing.
Yeah.
Individually, I'm not doing anything at the moment.
No, because you've done them. You've done a wolf run.
I've done my wolf run. I've done
chilling
my 24
out.
Mile hike. At the moment, I'm still getting over that. but yeah, I just am proud of being part of something that I'm hoping
is going to make a massive difference.
We can make a difference. Mm. Yeah.
To go back to the title of the conversation, which is honestly, if you could have an honest conversation with one person, it could be a celebrity, a friend, a younger version of yourself, someone who's died, who would it be and what would you say?
I think that honest conversation is, you know, it's be yourself, you know, just take time to be yourself and always be honest to yourself. And that's not a cliche saying that we're having that honest conversation. I think if you're honest to yourself, then you're going to go far.
Yeah, because it's so often that we are kidding ourselves about so much.
And I think it's just, if you take the time to to listen to each other in a relationship. Yeah. And that's not, you know, not even relating to this. I just mean in life in general. That is the recipe to, you know, talk, be honest, and you won't go far wrong.
And then a time for me to be honest, I find going swimming to the local swimming pool absolutely horrendous. My two boys love it. And we went at the weekend, and thankfully my daughter, who's nearly two, she didn't enjoy it. She found it too cold too quickly. So we nipped out and went to the cafe. So I think for the time being, I'm going to do the good thing and go to the cafe with my daughter rather than endure swimming pools. That must feel like a lifetime ago to you, had to endure the swimming pool.
It does, yeah. I don't miss that particular one, though. I'm not a fan.
Oh, it's like, it's just always too cold. And like, I like swimming, but in warm water.
Yes,
in warm water.
In the sun.
So that's it. Thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you for having me. Really, really, really
enlightening and important conversation. I've been Clemmie Telford. This excellent woman has been Kim Chambers. And this bonus episode has been brought to you in partnership with NatWest and Safe Lives. If you've been affected by the issues in today's episode or know someone who might be, encourage them to get in touch with their banks. It's one of the easiest ways to start repairing finances. And of course, safelives.org. Thanks for tuning into this week's episode of Honestly Podcast with me, Clemmie Telford. If you found this week's episode interesting, which I hope you did, I'd love to know your thoughts. So please do give me a rating or review, and even better, hit the subscribe button. That way you'll get each week's episode delivered straight to you.